Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Okay, thanks very much. Let's hope the slides work. We'll leave that to the techies. Anyway, thank you for inviting me. It's wonderful to be here, and it's great to have so many people who know far more about the subject than I do in the room, which is, it's actually unusual, because I spend my time trying to preach to people who haven't really got homelessness and inclusion on their agenda. We've got about 20 minutes or so. You're lucky the last speaker's not actually coming, so we can, you're not in a in threat of missing your lunch if I just tell you a few stories. And what I would like to do is share with you some of the experiences I've picked up over the last 2 years leading the Inclusion Health Board, but also tell you a little bit about what we're hoping to do with the new NHS in England. Because frankly, the health of the homeless in this country, their life expectancy, the way they're treated in many surgeries, in many accident and emergency departments, is completely unacceptable, and we need to do things far better. So my promise to you, leading now on inequalities for the new NHS in England, is that we will do better. We will work with Public Health England at a national level, but actually most importantly, we'll make sure that all of the people working in health will cooperate and work with those in housing, with social care, with charities, and we'll make sure that we have a better country in the next 2 to 3 years for vulnerable people, not just the homeless, but gypsies and travellers, prostitutes, and also asylum seekers. If we do get it right for the most vulnerable, we're more likely to get it right for the rest of England as well. And the theme is that the NHS belongs to the people. I'd like to thank Homeless Link for some of the photographs and permission to use these. So I am a GP, allegedly, on a Friday in Birmingham, and we have a large number of people who are technically homeless who come to see us in our practice. And that keeps me grounded. You know, I really honestly do understand what's going on. And each week I go out and meet others around the country. Last week I was at the York Street practice in Leeds, which I think is a model that could well be copied across the country. It takes what's happening in Leicester and at Luther Street in Oxford and takes it that little bit further. One of the things we will need to do, and I'll talk about that in a few minutes, is commission services, which are not services for us who are GPs, but services for patients and clients, users of the service. So the focus for commissioning needs to be on what human beings need rather than what I need as a GP. I'm rather well paid, rather comfortable in what I do. It's very easy to try and protect that rather than looking at the needs of the people we serve. My promise to you is that we'll do something about that. Doesn't mean that I will be very popular, but that's not new. So the NHS belongs to homeless people as well. And what we're trying to do is create on the foundations of our great 64, 65-year-old NHS, a new NHS in England, which will work in partnership across the different sectors, but something that's based on values. And this isn't due to the fact we've had a massive horror story in England in the last few weeks that comes from Stafford, which is a decade or so of atrocious lack of care and compassion. But it comes from the foundations of the NHS with Beveridge and Bevan. And the Constitution itself was formed and written about 4 or 5 years ago. So just for a couple of minutes, and I know your sugar levels are dropping, so it's easy. If you could just sort of look at the inside of your eyelids and close your eyes for a few seconds. And while I read out this wonderful, powerful paragraph for the Constitution, just think about either a patient or a client you've been working with who's homeless or in one of the vulnerable groups, or if you can't think of that, think about one of your family or yourself and how the NHS has looked after you. Because this is what we believe the NHS should be about. It's not very long. So the NHS belongs to the people. It's there to improve our health and well-being, supporting us to keep mentally and physically well, to get better when we're ill, and when we cannot fully recover, to stay as well as we can to the end of our lives. It works at the limits of science, bringing the highest levels of human knowledge and skill to save lives and improve health. It touches our lives at times of basic human need, when care and compassion are what matter most. If we could live out what that paragraph means in our personal lives and in our work lives, looking after people who are not just vulnerable to anyone in England, and if we followed those words and we treated people with dignity and looked after them with care and compassion, then we would have a better country, let alone a better health service. And all of our appointments to the new NHS include questions trying to judge people before we appoint them on whether they actually understand the words respect and dignity and compassion. And in every interview I've conducted, and seemingly there are weeks and months of interviews I've been involved with, I've asked the same question. Most people know I'm going to ask the question, so it is rather strange that they can't answer it, which is, take one of the values of the NHS Constitution and just demonstrate to me how you've lived those values in your professional life over the preceding year. And if they can't answer that, even if they might be a professor of medicine, they don't get appointed. And if they can't think of the values, because it is quite stressful in interview situations, I give them my laptop, my iPad with Everyone Counts on it, and say, how have you demonstrated over the last year of your professional life how you've lived out those two words, everyone counts? Because I think if we could start to think about this, we might be in a better place. And as Anna Soubry said earlier on, there are legal duties. Does that really matter? If we have a value-led organisation, you don't really need legal duties in order to make things happen. We should be doing this anyway. But we do have legal duties now, and we will make sure that the NHS delivers against them. And there are a number of specifics we have to do. Everything we're doing is focused on reducing inequalities. So even though the NHS will have a domain one, which is preventing preventable deaths or avoidable deaths, we want to dissect that down so that avoidable deaths for the vulnerable groups. I mean, it's crazy in England that we have a contract for GPs where there are thresholds where if you've hit 80 or 90%, depending on whichever it is, you get paid. Why is it that we don't get rid of the thresholds? Because surely it's easy to find 80% of a population. It's that final 10 or 5% which is the difficult one. The contract works against vulnerable people. I understand why it came in. It came in because, frankly, my colleagues weren't even reaching 20 or 30% in some practices. Most were brilliant in England. Some were just rubbish. So we brought in thresholds, but now's the time we need to grow up. If practices are turning away people who are homeless, for me, that's an absolute social injustice. Why should they deserve to continue to practice? That's where I'm at with this, and we'll make that happen. We also have to produce business plans and boring stuff, and I just thought I'd put some slides on with words because they're important, but we're going to do that anyway. What's more important are human beings. And so what we're going to try and do is help. So on one little trip around the country, I think there are people from Oxford here, from Luther Street somewhere. Hi, welcome. You provide brilliant care. And I was so impressed. We're coming down again, I hope, in April. But when I went from your practice to meet groups of GPs in Oxford, they said, wow, we think Luther Street's brilliant. It takes a lot of pressure off us, you know. But it's very difficult because the government have just brought out this stupid rule that we're can't register people unless they've got two methods of identification. And I said, well, that's Sorry, I said bollocks, actually, but nonsense. And that's a medical term. Because NHS Counter Fraud had produced this sheet, which was absolute nonsense. So the wonderful Martin Gibbs, stage left, when I got back, took it up with the ministers, and we found out that NHS Counter Fraud, which was trying to stop health tourism in England, had brought out this nonsense without actually asking permission or putting it through the gateway. So we got it repealed within a few weeks of finding that out. So that's one of the things we will do. But I don't believe there are any barriers to stopping GPs signing up people who are homeless. And what we will expect from a commissioning board is that that is not happening anymore. And because we hold the contract with GPs centrally in future, we will exercise our right holding those contracts when we hear these sort of things happening. Resistance is futile. This is my practice. The reason I've got lots of slides, by the way, is I worked out that this is on television. And if you don't have slides, they show pictures of who's speaking. And I'm much better at 5 miles distance than I am on that big screen. So that's one of the reasons for having the slides. Anyway, this is a surgery built in what was a very, very deprived part of Birmingham. It still is. Although Birmingham Council have tarted up all the roads in Birmingham, and particularly corners of big highways, so that the buildings look quite nice now, but you've only got to go through the veneer and you see it's just the same as it was before. But this is one of our days for our patients, where we put on for children with library services and various things. So going around the country, I found practices like mine, which are ordinary general practices who see a proportion of vulnerable patients. But I've seen some of the most wonderful practices that I've ever been to. For the last 2 weeks, I've had the privilege to go into the York Street practice in Leeds. I think Catherine's here as well today. Hello, well done, Catherine. She runs the practice there. Isn't it interesting how people who are running services for the homeless, who are doing wonderful things, the amount of care and compassion and skill they have is inversely proportional to the amount of pay they have in the NHS. It's quite shocking, really. We'll try and do something about that. But the York Street practice is providing health, social care, substance misuse. It's got housing interventions. It's got all sorts of stuff, very similar to Luther Street. It's a model funded through what will be in future our contract from the commissioning board centrally. And it also has money coming in from local government for substance misuse, and there's sexual health services, and they reach out and go to the Crypt, which is a centre for accommodation for the homeless. We will be able to commission in future models like that, like Luther Street, like the social enterprise in Leicester. We will have central control over the commissioning of centralised GP contracts. And we will exercise that through our local area teams. And we've just recruited some wonderful, a very wonderful, diverse group of people to make sure this happens centrally. It's supporting them. We just expect them to do it, but we're supporting them. And Ranjit's here, who is our new recruit to lead on in inclusion, health, and homeless. We're going to make this happen. But that doesn't prevent ordinary GP surgeries and dental surgeries providing fantastic care. That's what we really want. But I do think there's a model in towns like Leicester, Oxford, you could say Nottingham, Birmingham, Manchester, where we need services which go far beyond what any patient would expect of a GP surgery. You need to have rapid access to talking therapies, to psychological support. You have to have rapid access to drug and substance misuse and alcohol services all in one place, because this hard to reach phrase is rubbish, isn't it? I mean, it's just we don't make the effort. And when you make the effort, you've got to capture people quickly and show them that you care. And I don't care, frankly, whether it's the wonderful University College London partners running a chain of primary care services, which they should be doing, which is led by hospitals. Who's worrying about that? This is not about empires. This is about the human beings that we serve. And frankly, the biggest opposition to change is generally my profession. So we need to do something about it. We need to be not quite so precious as we are, but we need to recognize that we do have great skills as doctors, and they need to be discharged appropriately. It's not just about running organizations. And part of what we'll do is try to have these services more joined up. It struck me, being asked by the Labour government to lead on inclusion health, that it was all rather fragmented. So people think the NHS is becoming more fragmented with the current government's changes. It's not really. It wasn't joined up in the first place. So why is it that, as doctors, we haven't got a clue about what housing has to offer for the health of people? It's not in our curriculum. It's not in our GP training. And because we're exhausted trying to do what we do as a GP clinically, we never get the chance to meet them. I've had this privilege. Yesterday, I was at one of my many conferences I attend on the National Housing Federation. In the afternoon, it was the Public Health and the Local Government Association. All of these services must be joined up at a local level. Ultimately, we must be commissioning together locally, not just for health, but for housing, for social care, for drug and substance misuse, for education, for culture, media, and sport. We need a focus locally. And that has to come through the health and wellbeing boards. They've started to do some brilliant work here in Stoke-on-Trent, which is fantastic. When you go around the country, you meet such inspiring people. The problem, just like in public health, is there are lots of inspiring people, lots of good models, but what about the holes between all of those good models? I do think we've got a real opportunity as well through the academic health science networks, which are focused on innovation and doing things differently. And Cyril Chandler's over there, who's chairing the University College London Partners Network, which I've got a very tiny part to play in that. If we could get the networks looking at the health of larger populations and acting as advocates for the vulnerable, we can tie all the hospitals and GP surgeries and dentists together. Because doctors like working together. They just feel, for some reason, that they're prevented from it. So the JSNAs, and there's some great JSNAs. This is Cambridge. They've been doing some work with gypsies and travellers. The same issues apply whether you're in a deprived inner city area or out in the country. I was in Torbay a couple of weeks before Christmas, and as you probably know, I don't know if there's anybody from Torbay here, but there were 3 homeless deaths within, I think, 9 months last year. And there was 1,000 or so people on the streets carrying the coffin of the last person who died. It took 3 deaths for the rural area to understand it was a problem. And I spent a day with homeless people there learning that actually we need different models of care in rural areas. For substance misuse in South Devon, they had a bus that used to go round to look at the people who were, as it was described, the crackheads in the villages. Well, they included businessmen as well as homeless. But if you've got a bus, you've got to try and entice people to use the service, and that might not be the right place to use a bus, unlike your x-ray facility. Nobody used it because they wouldn't go near a bus because it said, I'm on drugs. So they said people didn't need the service, so they stopped it. Nonsense. But they've got a community hospital half full doing nothing. Why can't we use the community hospitals in the rural areas, do things differently? And I come onto a comfort zone. So this is a congratulations. You'll hear lots of congratulations, but this is a heartfelt congratulations for these guys. Why isn't the Pathway project, which is about mainly hospital stuff, being used in every hospital in England? It's a wonderful project. You'll hear more about it later, but the concept basically is to look after human beings, have mental health, social health, housing and physical health all look at the patient and support them, train up people who were homeless, which helps them get jobs as well, help them not stay in hospital for very long, And when they have to leave, they should then leave into accommodation, not onto the streets. It saves probably £200,000 a year for a hospital size of UCL. You could do it differently in smaller hospitals using their own physicians leading this, rather than having to import wonderful angels like Nigel from Leicester. You could do it in every hospital, and that's why Aidan Halligan, who's the number one inspirational speaker in the country, will be here this afternoon, because he's selling this in Liverpool this morning. Brilliant. These are the people who should be winning awards. The homeless people who work in Pathway should be winning awards, and indeed when they got the award, one of them, who is here somewhere, went and stood on the stage and it received the award. That's what it's all about. It's brilliant, and she's here on this slide. So the message really is the NHS in England from April the 1st are here to work across agencies. We're not precious about what we're doing. We'll be working with anyone who can deliver. We don't mind whether that's social enterprise. We actually don't mind whether that's a private company either, as long as they have the same values and live to the same values as the NHS constitution. We're all in it together. What we're doing at the moment is a disgrace in many parts of the country, but is wonderful in others. Every citizen of England, wherever you are, they are, deserves the same opportunity. And coming to the end now, I just want to give you a few thoughts from some famous faces and thoughts they said. But I just wanted to finish by saying, I'm into health because I grew up in for the first 5.5, 6 years of my life, I lived in a council house in the Black Country in the West Midlands. And my mother's parents, parents and their friends and relatives died young. And they died young because mostly they smoked or they had very poor accommodation. Many, including my mum, was a pregnant teenager. And I think we can do much better. And I'm in medicine because I wanted to help people. You're all here because you want to help other human beings. If we could get those sort of thoughts and values across the whole of the NHS and maintain them despite the fact people become institutionalized when they work in hospitals, I think we'll have a better place. But we've all got to work together on this. I don't care whether somebody's a professor of medicine or a doctor, or whether they're homeless, or whether they're a teacher or a nurse. It doesn't matter to me. We're all in this together. And the wonderful thing about this conference is we have people who are users of the service here, as well as people who are trying their hardest to deliver care. And my role nationally will be to help you deliver that. But Obama, who I think is an absolute hero in America, when I teach, I'm backwards and forwards to Boston many times each year. And almost all of my friends there support Obama and were talking about him before he came to power. His reforms in America, what he was trying to do, I absolutely support. And he said, change will not come if we wait for some other person or some other time. He's absolutely right. And when I led the Royal College of GPs, I actually had another Bostonian as a connection. My office was RFK's bedroom when he lived in London. And the message from him was that moral courage is the key thing you need to make a difference. And that moral courage might be challenging Royal Colleges or challenging the BMA, or if you're locally, challenging local commissioners. But if you've got that moral courage to do something because you know that it's right, and you will not tolerate the social injustices we've had, even in our socialized health system, as the Bostonians call it, we will make a difference. And the most important one is Gandhi, and this is very commonly used, but I believe we must become the change we want to see in the world. If we live out the values, which are, for me, in the NHS Constitution, partly because I helped write it, so I would say that, wouldn't I? But those values, treating people with dignity, caring for people with compassion, and most importantly, that everyone counts, whoever they are, wherever they are. I believe we'll have a better NHS, and because the NHS is one of the pillars of our society in England, we'll also have a better country as well. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.